So today, as you know, is an important day on the calendar because it is Eid, which occurs on the 10th day of the 12th month in the Muslim calendar. And that is the celebration in Hebrew called Chag HaKorban. It's the celebration of the sacrificing or the binding of Ishmael by Abraham, which happened in Mecca at the Kaaba. And I don't think it can be, I didn't check, but it can't be all that often that Akedat Ishmael and the Yom Tov they have for that falls out at the same week as the Parshat Vayera, where we talk about Akedat Yitzchak. But you know, it had to come as far as Hamoriah, it was a shorter journey. So it seems that it seems an appropriate week to talk about the challenges of faith, because ultimately Akedat Yitzchak was the final test for Abraham, according to most of the Rishonim, and the ultimate test of his faith. So I'd like to look today at what we mean when we say faith. And I'm going to use faith and belief interchangeably. I know there is originally faith and belief meant two different things. Belief was things you knew to be true, and faith was things you had to know were true, whether you liked it or not. Tenets of faith. The Christian, early medieval Christianity had a distinction between belief and faith. It seems arbitrary to me, and in Hebrew there's no such distinction that I'm aware of. We talk about emunah, meaning faith or belief or whatever, so I don't want, if I use different words, I mean the same thing. So, there's a verse in source number one. I'll read that because it's a nice short source. I'm reading number three because it's also short. Nehemiah is a pasuk. I know you haven't learned Nehemiah necessarily, but you may say it in davening. Atah Hashem Elokim, you are God, Hashem Bachata be'Avram, who chose Avram, V'atzeitam Or Kasdim, and brought him out of Or Kasdim, and we talked last time about Or Kasdim, what that means. V'samta Shema Avraham, and you made his name Avram, U'matzata et levavon ne'eman lefanecha, you found his heart faithful before you. So Avraham represents faith. After he'd come out from Or Kasdim, it sounds as though at the end, after everything's happened, then he's found to be faithful. Faith or belief is a very important mitzvah, and possibly more important nowadays than it was even in the time of Abraham. If we look at Yonit, you can read source number two.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Rabbi Sinai expounded, 613 before we're set to Moshe.
For the tape. What used to be what was for the tape.
Rabbi Simlai,
I've made this last an hour somehow.
Expounded. 613 mitzvot were said to Moshe. 365 negative mitzvot, the same as the number of days of the year, and 248 positive mitzvot corresponding to the limbs of the body. Rabbi Kamnuna said, what is the proof text? Moshe commanded us Torah, barring 33. Torah, in Gematria, 611, I am the Lord your God, and you shall have no other gods, were heard from the Almighty. Habakkuk came and establish them all in a single mitzvah, as the verse states, the righteous shall live by his faith.
Thank you very much.
Very well.
And thank you for the coffee. So this Gemara, first of all, this is the source for the six, we talk about 613 mitzvot. This is the only Gemara that mentions the 613 mitzvot. This is this gematria of Torah, Tziva, Lan, and Moshe is the basis for the belief in 613. Nowhere else in the Gemara does it ever try and count what the 613 mitzvot are. The only two that we know are included are Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yeh Lecha, because that's explicit in this Gemara over here. And then having set up 613, then the Gemara starts saying different people came and made less and less mitzvot until finally we get to Habakkuk, and there's only one mitzvah left, which is faith. Meaning, the way to get to all 613 mitzvot is through faith, and therefore, for us, faith is the essential mitzvah which leads us to all of the other mitzvot. So it's important for us to know what we mean by faith and how we can get to faith. There's a Gemara in Shabbat and a Kuf Dalet, which is spelled Kid, and this Gemara has the kids from the Beis Midrash coming and saying all sorts of agalatas based on the Aleph Bet. And there's a whole page of going through all of the letters of the Aleph Bet, and then combinations of letters and different kinds of things. And every thing means something different. So they come to the letter Nun and they say there's Nun Kfufa and Nun Pshuta. There's a bent Nun, which we call a regular Nun, and Nun Pshuta, a straight Nun, which we call a final Nun. And these children darshaned that, right? Nun Kfufa, Nun Pshuta, Ne'eman Kafuf, Ne'eman Pashut. That there is a faithful person who is bent and a faithful person who is straight. I don't really have any idea what that means. Mm. It seems to me that nobody really speaks about it, and it's not exactly clear what that is. Without going into that, I want to just cheat and use that on a darshan in an entirely different way, say that there are potentially two different kinds of ways of reaching faith. Two kinds of faith. The kind of faith which is emunah pshuta, a simple faith. I just believe it because I know, because someone told me it's true, or because I believe it's true, or because I feel it's true, or because intuitively it seems to be true. And there's a ne'eman kafuf, somebody who's bent, whose belief is only based on having figured it out and worked through logically why they believe in what they believe. Right? That the word kafuf can be forced as well, right, in Hebrew. So their belief is derived, is worked out, or somebody just... So I want to say there's two different kinds of ways of arriving at belief. One is, you tell me it's true, I believe you. That makes me much less gullible, if I just believe everything you say. And the other way of belief is to try and think through scientifically, rationally, logically, philosophically, whatever methodology I use, to arrive at a certain truth, which then is my belief. And actually, Bertrand Russell is probably the greatest philosopher of the 20th century, suggests there are possibly two different ways of knowing things, which I think is similar. He says, are there two ways of knowing, which may be called respectively reason and intuition? Reason means I figured it out. Intuition means it just feels right to me. If so, is either to be preferred to the other? And that's what I really want to look at. How should we approach faith? Should we believe in God, believe in the principles, the 13 principles, or however many principles you want to believe in, because somebody told me they're true, my parents told me they're true, my rabbi told me they're true, I read in a book it's true, I thought on the internet that it's true, or should my faith be based on reason? I sit down with all the philosophy books and all the science books and figure out that yes, God exists and God is one and God is what? How should we do that? So before I come to my favorite Rishon, who is the Rambam, obviously, I'd like to start with more recent people and look at the way that the Rav Shach writes it, and also the Beis Halevi. Rav Shach wrote a commentary on Avi Ezri, on the Rambam and Hilchos Teshuva, and I didn't have access to that. Unfortunately, where I live now, they don't have Avi Ezri on the shelf, being post-Haredi. So I took it out as a translation I did of a book I translated last year. So it's a paraphrasing. It's a pretty cover.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the book's pretty, but that's... So, Michael, would you like to read number 5? Okay.
Rav Shach once asked his teacher...
Have you ever heard of Rav Shach? I don't know. Rav Shach was the Gadol Hador before Rav Eliashiv, who is the current Gadol Hador. He was the Rosh Yeshiva, Panovich Yeshiva, and I suppose after Rosh Hashanah Zalman Arbach passed away, people looked to Rav Shach to be the final word in matters Haredi and B'nai Brak. This is him speaking, and the Brisker Rav is the Grizz, whatever, fine. That's what Wikipedia is for. Yeah.
Rav Shach once asked his teacher, the Brisker Rav, the following question. Recognition of the Creator is so obvious, a person can see with his own two eyes, that the Creator exists. What is the alternative? Why is the knowledge of God considered faith? The Briscoe Rabbi replied that he had asked his father, Rav Chaim of Brisk, the same question. Rav Chaim answered that it is true that knowledge of God through the clear evidence of creation is not considered faith. However, knowledge and intellectual awareness of God is only the first step. The place where the intellect stops is where faith begins. The Briscoe Rabbi continued to explain, a person's intellect is limited, each person at their own level. The brain cannot understand concepts that are outside space and time. It is possible to recognize things that are outside the conceptual vision and understanding. The human intellect is limited, therefore where the intellect ends is where faith begins.
So if I can paraphrase, it's all very well doing your investigation, but anything that you figure out for yourself is not called faith, because that is by definition limited. Faith is where you can't figure out anything else, that's where faith begins. But to be honest, I always thought that was a Christian idea. I wasn't aware that was Jewish until I saw it here, and I actually was quite shocked when I first discovered the source. But it makes sense. Right? It says that since our brains are limited, we're never going to understand God. So therefore, however far we get, we're going to be we're going to get so far, and then faith takes over after that. Yeah. And the base Halevi, who is the grandfather of the Gliskarov, I think is that right? If I'm wrong, check it up on Wikipedia, or change the Wikipedia entry to be like I said, and then it'll make both of those correct. The Beis Halevi on Shmot has the same kind of idea.
Lee. Okay, this part of faith is to believe in all the words of the Torah and the explanations that we have received from our rabbis, even though things are impossible to prove based on evidence. Everything that is clearly proven is called knowledge, not faith. The commandment to believe applies to those things that cannot be proven rationally. If a person only believes in the things that are demonstratively true, he has not yet fulfilled the mitzvah of faith.
Now, somebody who only believes what they know to be true doesn't have proper faith. It is limited faith. It is not yet done the mitzvah of faith. That's the same idea. That faith can only begin where reason and intellect finishes. So, emunah pshuta. If I'm going back to my two nuns, emunah pshuta, I believe it to be true without thinking about it, without investigating, without understanding. Or if any investigation that I do is only going to get me so far, and then I'm going to have to make a leap of faith to find God regardless. Right? Anything I know can be unknown. Anything I figure out, someone could bring a counter-argument to it. Anything that I think to be true, so maybe it's not true.
Can Emunah Pshuta be equated with taking a leap of faith? If you simply believe, you don't ask questions, you're also taking a leap of faith, essentially. So then, I guess, I'm wondering...
I'm nodding, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, right, sorry. I thought that was just the copy work. Magic. So earlier you said that you thought it was a Christian belief, initially.
Yes.
But if Emunah Pshuta is essentially at its core a leap of faith, then how do you reconcile that?
No, so I'm it's no longer a Christian belief.
No, I understand, but, okay, never mind. I guess
I accept that clearly the Christians took it from us.
Right.
Because Rosh Hashanah said it first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. Even when you learn something, you only accept that you have a faith. Like, you might call it intellectual. Anyway, you've been told two opposing things, but the faith that you have all needs to be the one thing that you learn. So, then what starts first?
I think it's a really good point, which I was kind of trying to avoid. So, is it really? Thank you for bringing it up. The answer at the end of the day is probably both of these are true. That if you have belief first, then you'll be able to logically figure out the stuff and get to where you're going. And if you logically figure out, you'll be able to get to the... I think you need a combination of the two to get anywhere. I don't think it's as cut and dry as I'm trying to make it seem. But nevertheless, I want to keep investigating what is the path that would be most useful. I suppose at the end of the day I'm going to say that the correct path is each person should choose whichever path works best for them, and there is no right answer because they're Jewish. So without in any way wishing any disrespect to Rosh Hashanah or the Brisker Rav or the Beis Halevi, I just have to be honest and say that their answer, what they say, really reminds me a lot of Douglas Adams. The late Douglas Adams was one of the high priests of atheism. And if you're going to be an atheist, you're going to be really miserable. So you may as well make jokes about it. So if you're going to be an atheist, he is probably the second funniest atheist, in my opinion, after Terry Pratchett. Actually, third funniest, after Terry Pratchett and Tim Minchin, but you can't listen to Tim Minchin because he's very rude. But Hitchhiker's... so Douglas Adams here proves God's existence, or disproves God's existence. You may have to be English to understand this, so I apologize to any Americans here. I don't know if you've read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but Arthur Dent is taken by four prefects out into space because they are destroying the Earth for a new super highway. And in order to be able to understand what the Vogons are saying, forward prefect gives, this is all familiar, right? It's just Chazar issue. Forward prefect puts a Babel fish inside Arthedain's ear, and the Babel fish is a fish which lives on brain waves and as a side product translates any language into the language that the person understands. So therefore, it's a really neat trick how so that Arthedain can go around the whole universe and communicate with everything and solves all the problems. Right, so this Babel fish then, this Babel fish is considered a disproof of God's existence. How so? I get to read this one because it's an italic. Now it is such a bizarrely improbable coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly useful could have evolved by chance, that some thinkers have chosen to see it as a final and clinching proof of the non-existence of God. The argument goes something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist as God, for proof denies faith, and without faith I am nothing. But, says man, the Babel fish is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It could not have evolved by chance. It proves you exist, and so therefore, by your own arguments, you don't. QED. Oh dear, says God, I hadn't thought of that, and promptly vanishes in a puff of logic. Then man says, my, that was easy, and goes on to prove that black is white, and gets killed on the next zebra crossing. If your faith is built on not having proof of God's existence, then any proof would deny your faith. You kind of get tied up in knots. So that is how, I suppose, well, contemporary rabbis have decided that we should have emunah pshuta and just believe, because it's so obvious that God exists that faith is only for anything beyond that. I'm not sure exactly what the beyond that would be. Rambam, in Sefer HaMitzvot, seems to say a similar thing, perhaps. Source number 8.
Yeah. The first mitzvah is the commandment that we are commanded to believe in God. This is that we are commanded to believe that there exists a first cause and reason, which animates everything that exists. This is the meaning of the verse, I am the Lord your God.
Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot tries to figure out what are the 613 mitzvot that Rabbi Simlai was speaking about in the Gemara and Makot. And the first one must be Anochi Hashem Elokecha, because that's one of the only two that's explicitly mentioned. Right, there's a lot more mitzvahs than 613 in the Torah, so you've got to weed them out and work out which ones are in and which ones are out. But Rambam says the first mitzvah is the mitzvah to believe in God. Right? Rambam lists his mitzvahs in some kind of logical order rather than by parsha, as the Chinuch does, and he says a belief. Now, all of the commentaries ask on Rambam that it makes no sense to have a command to believe in God. Because if you believe in God, then there's no point in commanding it. And if you don't believe in God, then who's telling you to do it? So it makes no sense. You can't command somebody to believe in them. Right? If you believe it, then you don't need the commandment. If you don't believe it, then there's no one commanding you to believe it. I just did the same thing twice. An extra minute to the shiur. And everyone has different answers and explanations of what the Rambam means. Now, of course, if you remember that Sefer Mitzvot was written not in Hebrew, but in Arabic, then things change a little bit. Because if you look at how Rambam worded the parallel mitzvah when he wrote it in Hebrew, in Mishnah Torah, he says something slightly different. Katie. Okay. Number 9.
The foundation of foundations and the pillar of wisdom is to know that there exists a
friend. Here the mitzvah is to know, not to believe. Now, to me, belief means I accept it as true, but know means to figure it out. And if you look at Yisrael Torah, after laying down the basic principles in chapter 1 and the beginning of chapter 2, Rambam then spends 2.5 chapters going through the way that the world works, basically giving you a science textbook, science class, so that you can come to know God. Right? So if the word means know, you could certainly command somebody to know God. We need to try and to understand God, to see God in the world, to understand how the world works so that you understand what God is. In other words, Rambam, I think, is saying in source number 9 that one should use their rational, their logic, to try and understand God as best they can. And we'll say that in Sefer Mitzvot, it was a mistranslation. What's the word in the Arabic? It's actually a word which is something like etakad, which I don't know exactly what it is or what it means. But luckily Rabbi Kapach does know what it means. And he writes a footnote, which I've translated, about this word, which is translated, all the translators call it mitzvah to believe. Rabbi Kaffa says in verse number 10. Then, yeah.
The correct meaning of this word is knowledge, worldview, or logic that a person holds to be correct and true, whether he reached that knowledge through investigation or received wisdom. I have translated it here as faith, since that is how most of the Rishonim translated it, even though in other places I avoided this word for the sake of clarifying the matter.
You know, everyone assumes it means faith, but really it means something which I know to be true so much that even if somebody disproves it, I still believe it to be true. If I just a weak parallel, but something that was in the news in the last few weeks, we all know that one of the fundamentals of Einstein's special theory of relativity is that nothing goes faster than the speed of light. Yeah, and if you would find something that does go faster than the speed of light, you would undermine all of 20th century physics. So when some scientists in Italy discovered that neutrinos were going 64 nanoseconds faster than the speed of light when they shot them from Switzerland to Italy, you've read this in the papers, right?
Sorry, no.
Man!
But I did hear about ludicrous speed.
Okay, I know about
Star Wars.
So they did this experiment. They were shooting neutrinos from Switzerland to Italy, and they were doing this experiment, and someone noticed, by the way, that the neutrinos were getting there 64 nanoseconds quicker than they should have been if they were going close to the speed of light. So what do you do when you find, and they repeated the experiment, and they measured it more accurately, and they closed the whole tunnel to try and work out exactly where the neutrinos are coming from and where they're going to, and everything they could possibly figure out. And eventually, after about 3 years of trying to work it out, they said, listen, we have no idea. We know this can't be right, but here's what we found, and someone please come and disprove it. That to me seems like a classic example. I know, logically, I know that the speed of light is the ultimate constant. Therefore, even when I'm presented with evidence that contradicts it, there must be a problem with my proof, with the evidence that I see, rather than with my belief.
Wouldn't you just call that fear as opposed to knowledge? They fear that they're right, so that they want someone to disprove them. They want someone to disprove. I mean,
maybe I'm not sure. You know what I'm saying is what my belief in Einstein's special theory of relativity is not just emunah pshuta. I don't believe it because Einstein said it, so therefore it must be true. I do, but many people who are scientists believe in it because they've done so many experiments which seem to confirm the special theory of relativity, and every time they've tested it, they've found that it fits in with the theory of relativity. Therefore, all the evidence points to the fact that he is correct, all his predictions came true, everything is true. Any evidence to the contrary, therefore, I believe in Einstein's special theory of relativity, not as blind faith, not with a leap of faith, but because it's been proven to me. But my belief comes in that if somebody presents with contrary evidence, I still stick with my original belief. I don't throw it away because of that contrary evidence. And because my belief in the special theory of relativity has been proven over and over again. Demonstrated over and over again. Mm-hmm. This neutrino experiment is one experiment, and therefore it's more likely there's a mistake with that than with my underlying belief. Okay. Not only that, but neutrinos have been shown in other experiments to travel at close to the speed of light. Mm-hmm. But it's not blind faith. It's not, I just believe that more than that. Mm-hmm. But the balance of evidence is such that even if you present me with an argument, and I can't answer your argument, I don't yet throw away my whole belief system. Because it's true that, Einstein overturned Newtonian physics by challenging it, and everyone has believed in, this is the Popper Kuhn machlokas in the philosophy of science, but Einstein basically is challenging the Newtonian concept of gravity and physics. And initially, people stuck with Newton couldn't accept Einstein until eventually more and more evidence was presented to show that his theory is correct, so that people then switched over to the other one. So there comes like a I don't want to use the word tipping point and get way off topic. But in other words, my belief is the best I can do. It can be overthrown. Eventually, you'll show me that whatever quantum mechanics is true, despite the fact it makes no sense.
It comes out of weightiness of evidence.
Right. Okay. Right. But I won't suddenly drop my belief because you asked me such a good question I can't answer it.
Mm-hmm.
you need to ask me a million questions and bring a million proof, and then eventually I will draw my belief. But I think that's what Rambam means when he says this word belief. It's not a belief, I just believe it true. I know it to be true because philosophically it makes sense, and because scientifically it makes sense, and because all the evidence points to it. So even if you bring me an argument against it, there must be a problem with the argument you're bringing me, rather than with what my belief is. Whereas it's a belief in a... Does that make sense? No?
Yeah.
I think that's what Rambam is saying. He says it explicitly. I'm going to skip the top of page 3 and go to source number 11, which is not my translation, so you can read it as you will. You can be part of whenever you
want. In reading my present treatise, bear in mind that by faith we do not understand merely that which is uttered with the lips, but also that which is apprehended by the soul. The conviction that the object of belief is exactly as it is apprehended. If, as regards real or supposed truth, you content yourself with giving utterance to them in words, without apprehending them or believing in them, especially if you do not seek real truth, you have a very easy task, as, in fact, you will find many ignorant people professing articles of faith without connecting any idea with them.
Pause for a second. But he's basically saying, if you just believe it because someone told you it's true, you're an idiot. Right, and that's fine, but that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about, when Rambam is talking about faith, he doesn't mean something you just believe. Okay, keep going.
For belief is only possible after the apprehension of a thing. It consists in the conviction that the thing apprehended has its existence beyond the mind, in reality exactly as it is conceived in the mind. If in addition to this we are convinced that the thing cannot be different in any way from what we believe it to be, and that no reasonable argument can be found for the rejection of the belief or for the admission of any deviation from it, then the belief is true. Renounce desires and habits, follow your reason, and study what I am going to say in the chapters which follow.
Rambam clearly says, don't just say I believe. Figure it out. And if you haven't figured it out, you haven't got belief. For Rambam, if I'm going back to my nuns, Rambam is what I want to call the emunah, the ne'eman kafel. That his belief is based on the fact that it makes sense, that he's worked it through, that he's followed all the arguments. And half, a large part of Moana Vuchin is bringing philosophical arguments to demonstrate the points that he's making in the book. Right? It's the opposite of what we saw in the earlier sources. And therefore that must be what he means also in his Sefer, in Sefer Mitzvahs. Sefer Achinuch follows the Rambam, and he famous Mitzvah 25 because he's going according to the order of the Parshas. But I think he's saying the same kind of idea as Rambam.
Sorry, which Rambam was
that? Sefer Achinuch.
Cool. The concept of faith is that a person should fix in his soul that it is true, and the opposite is completely impossible. If someone asks him, he will answer that this is what his heart believes, and he will not admit to the opposite, even on the pain of death.
Even if somebody says to you, this can't, even pain of death, which I think is probably a kal v'chomer, even if someone disproves that, you're still going to believe it no matter what, because this is the only thing it can be. Somebody comes to you and says, I was once teaching in a certain institution, and as like a throwaway line, I said something like, that's as obvious as the fact that the earth goes around the sun. And they said, no, it doesn't. I'm like, sorry. I said, well, it says in Tillim that the sun goes around the earth. And I was most disturbed. And I said to them, you're going to sit exams in a non-Jewish environment, and what are you going to write in your exam paper when you do science? They said, well, we know we're supposed to lie to the examiners, and we're supposed to pretend, but we know that really the sun goes around the earth. Okay.
Ouch.
So... I mean, can't argue, must be true. What can you say? But if you believe that the sun is the center of the solar system, because solar system means that things that go around the sun, which is called soul, if you believe that, then even if they tell you that you're wrong, and even if they bring something to prove it, and even if whatever, you're going to say that and even if they say, well, two things in orbit, one, they're both going around each other, so it doesn't make any difference, you'll still reject that and say that this is since Copernicus, we believe based on evidence that the Earth goes around the Sun and not vice versa. The universe makes more, the solar system makes more sense. We describe it as the Earth going around the Sun rather than as the Sun going around the Earth. Right. So the irony is that the Rambam, who clearly says don't just recite beliefs and believe them because someone tells them to be true, don't just say them, don't just accept them, but it's only called belief if you actually figure it out and understand and work through the thing. So somebody, and we don't know who, turned Rambam's 13 principles into 13 animamins, which are just davened at the end of the siddur. And stick them on. Someone wrote them, we don't know who. Someone else put them at the end of the siddur. And now animamin is something that if anyone says it at all, they don't actually figure out what it means or think it through. They just recite it. Exactly what Rambam says not to do. But something called belief. That's what we do now with what we say, I believe, which is a big irony. Animamin appeared in the 5th edition of the siddur in Prague in 1536. Rambam died in the 13th century, so there's a big gap between Rambam, who had time to turn in his grave before they reprinted it. We don't know who wrote Ani Mamin. Yigdal also takes the Rambam 13 principles and turns them into a 13 stanza song, which is why you always have to repeat the last line because it never works out in the niggun. And that was probably written by Emmanuel Haromi. But that's not presented as Ani Mamin. That's just kind of fact. But Ani Mamin, people now say, I believe, right? And why do I believe it? Because it's in the siddur. So I believe it. Or I believe it because I say it every morning. Or I believe it because there's a song about it and everyone goes, aye, aye, aye. And that's really exactly what the Rambam says not to do. Right? So, but again, that is what Rav Shach would yet say to do, or the Brisker Rav, or the Beis Halev would say that's really what you should do, just believe these articles of faith. So I think there's been, again, I'm oversimplifying, and I look forward to comments on the blog of everything I've got wrong here, but it seems that there's a shift from some of the Rishonim who are more rational to a contemporary view of these same ideas where they just accept it. Cholatol HaFavot, I could have quoted Sadia in Emunot V'Deot, who also tried to show rationally the beliefs in Munot, which are the beliefs in the Deot, which are the rational things, tries to show they all make sense. He's earlier the Rambam, Chavot Levavot, Rebbein of Bechaya, asks exactly this question, are we supposed to investigate or are we supposed to just accept it? Michael.
Are we obligated to investigate God's unity using reason or not? I say that as much as a person is able to investigate using reason or similar concepts of logic, using the intellect, he is obligated to do so to the best of his ability and the limit of his knowledge. I have already written at the beginning of this book about things which demonstrate his obligation to investigate sufficiently. Someone who avoids investigation is despicable and is considered little wisdom and little action.
So you ask, Chavot, you absolutely have to try and figure it out. Right? Don't just accept it. Blind faith, no thank you. Even the Ramak, Moshe Cordovero, who was the teacher of the Arizal for a short while, and who was one of the major Kabbalists in Sfat, but is hardly studied at all today because the Arizal came and reinvented Kabbalah and made what was virtually a two-dimensional system into a three-dimensional system, which is much more exciting, explains more things than that. But the Ramak was, before the Ari, was the pinnacle of Kabbalah. And he also says, you've got to investigate, Lee.
There is no doubt that one of the things that the Torah commands is for a person to recognize his creator according to his perception. As the verse states, I am the Lord your God. In his explanation of this mitzvah, Rambam writes, beginning on Yisrael HaTorah, the foundation of foundations and the pillar of wisdom is to know that there is a prime mover. There is no doubt that Rambam's intention is that this mitzvah contains the requirements to understand the order of created things to whatever degree a person is able. This means that included within this mitzvah is the obligation to know how things came to be.
Now he's going to talk about, he wants to say we have to figure out how Kabbalistically the divine presence came down through the different worlds and the different spheres and the different things till we get to the world that we have. But the point is you're supposed to try and figure out. The mitzvah is to use your brain and try and understand God and understand God's relation with the world. And by looking at the world, we discover God. But it does seem that today very few people say that, except, ironically, the people who do try and prove God exists using, without mentioning any names, discovery seminars or arachim or things like that. And they try and, depending on how honest they are, they either try and prove that the Torah is true and that God exists, or they try and present arguments in favor of it, or they try and say that you have permission to believe if you so desire. Ironically, they're using an approach that I think has been rejected by the mainstream, certainly the mainstream of Haredism today. But I think a lot of Jews have rejected that approach, and that's being used to try and encourage people to become religious, which is another irony. I think both approaches are could be very dangerous. To try and tell somebody you just must believe it because somebody tells you it's true and don't ask any questions, that works for some people for some of the time, but there's always a danger that one morning someone will wake up and say, well, maybe it's not, and walk out the door. On the other hand, to try and prove something to somebody if you haven't got compelling proof is even worse than telling them to just believe it. I know of more than one case of Beis Yaakov girls who complained to their teacher that they wondered what, you know, how do we know this is all true? So the response of the Beis Yaakov was to bring in one of these seminar type people and bring all the arguments of proof. And right, so it's an interesting move. And some of these girls just said, that's it. That's the best you've got. We thought someone had the answer somewhere. That's ridiculous, stupid. None of those things are compelling at all and led to a greater crisis of faith than if they would have just said, don't ask those questions, the answers are too difficult. I think that, well, we're talking about atheists before. I'll talk about the grumpy atheist, Richard Dawkins, who has taken on the mantle, I suppose, along with Christopher Hitchens, of being the Cohen Gadol of atheism. And he admits that if he had lived before Darwin, he would also believe in God. That before Darwin, before natural selection, before the theory of evolution, you would look at the world, and the only explanation for how we could have such complex beings in the world as human beings or animals or anything in the world, the only explanation would be the watchmaker argument, would be William Paley or Chavot HaLavot brings the same argument, that there must be a creator to make the things that we see in the world. However, says Dawkins, Darwin, who himself was a frum Christian, was buried in Westminster Abbey, and no one ever put him in Cheirim, but post-Darwin, we don't need God anymore in the equation. And in fact, now if we look at the evidence seems to point away from God and towards a more natural scientific approach. Now, I don't know whether that has filtered into the Jewish world consciously, but it seems to me that it's much more difficult. In Rambam's time, it wasn't easy to prove that God existed or present arguments, but it was possible. I suggest that today, I don't think you can prove to somebody that God exists. I don't think you can prove to yourself that God exists. I don't think that it's possible to present as much evidence that God exists as you would have, for example, in Einstein's special theory of relativity. You can construct arguments, you can present evidence, but I think there is opposing evidence, which is at least as compelling, if you're coming into it with an open mind. If you already believe, and you're just trying to bolster your case, then you can say anything you want, and that will strengthen your belief. If you don't already believe, then I don't think you can present a compelling argument. However, what am I going to say? So therefore, I think the Chazon Ish, this is the outside, on Wednesday, I believe. Chazon Ish passed away in 1953. He was probably probably the most probably the most important rabbi of the 20th century in terms of far-reaching consequences of his views. He created the B'nai Brak. He created, it was he who set out the relationship between the State of Israel and the Haredi community. And he was complete genius. And he writes, I've quoted from Hitorah, it's actually in one of his letters that somebody collected all the exciting bits from the Chazal, put in a book called Hitorot. And he says, Beth, did you read it?
Even though the principles of faith and the opinions which are accepted and established for us are based in deep wisdom and scientific investigation, but the correct path before us is to walk with a pure heart and to believe with complete and simple faith. It is our obligation to distance ourselves from investigation, to make all the principles true in our heart with simplicity, as they are common in everyone's mouth. This applies equally to wise people and to fools.
So he says, it was true for the Rambam and the Rishonim that they could figure it out logically. But for us today, we're supposed to accept it. They figured it out. We're supposed to just believe it and accept it without asking any questions, regardless of who we are and what we do. Which is why it's ironic.
It's like the task is too difficult now. So it's just because we can't compete.
We should believe that it is logical, but we shouldn't try and figure out what that logic is.
It's just impossible.
Who then more true today's day and age that people, like in an age of information, like the people just, anything that you hear, like you just say like, oh, I can Google it, I can look it up on Wikipedia. People need to have like the information, the knowledge, the investigation for themselves. People, I don't think in today's day and age it is a simple pure faith that people can have.
There's probably a reason the Haredi world is trying to ban the internet.
Right.
Yeah. No Wikipedia.
I think the Chazon Ish, as much as it bothers me, I don't like that. But I think he's right. If you can live your life like that, if you can just accept and believe without asking questions, I think that's definitely the safest and best thing to do. Because once you start asking questions, there's nowhere to know where you end up and how you want to stop. And it's a very dangerous path to go on. On the other hand, if you need to ask those questions and find those answers, then to tell somebody to just believe and not ask those questions is going to push them out the door equally. So I think it very much, personally, I think it very much depends on the person and giving the right answer to the person that's asking the question.
Growing into some kind of struggle is just decided,
like that doesn't exist in this. I don't clarify.
I don't really know what I mean exactly, but I've always kind of had this idea that because there's like some kind of dignity in growth and struggling to believe and in this investigation, and not just receiving just this pure faith like the messages from the Catholic Church. That whole thing that I thought was always kind of like the strength of the individual Judaism is like just, it's not.
Well, you basically contradict.
What you're saying is kind of like Chovot Levavot, the same like Rambam is saying.
Right. I guess that's been the approach I've been most exposed to. And I know this exists, but it's just...
I'd like to stress, in my opinion, each person has to figure out for themselves how best to approach God and how they can do it. And there's no point, it's very harmful for somebody who's a rational person to try and rationally prove something to somebody who's an intuitive person, or vice versa. It's not going to work. And Ne'eman Kassel is not going to speak to a Ne'eman Pashut, or vice versa. And each person has to figure out for themselves, or a combination of it. I mean, it's not only two options, but each person has to figure out for themselves how best to approach God and how best to approach an understanding and knowledge of God, and where that comes from.
But that option isn't being given.
I think the Chazon Ish would disagree with me. I don't know who he's speaking to be honest. I don't know whether he's speaking to the people in this room or he's speaking to people in B'nai Brak. And it could be this is the right approach to the people he's speaking to. So how do you...
It might be like...
But go on anyway.
But like, how does this relate to Abraham then? Like in the beginning, we're saying like, he was a faithful... whatever, he was faithful. So what kind of faithful was he then? And what are we to take from that? Like, if we're sort of to emulate Abraham to a certain extent, can we not learn a certain approach based on the way he knew or believed?
That's not a tangent, that's exactly the right question, which leads me to the next part of the shift, which is almost the end of the shift, which is, what was Avraham's approach and how did Avraham get there? So the answer is, I think each person reads their own personal philosophy and says that was Avraham's philosophy as well. Rambam says that Avraham was an Aristotelian philosopher who went through and figured out logically and rationally how everything works. The power within you says that Avraham was a believer and he knew it to be true without asking any questions, and whatever your view is, you'll say that's what Avraham's view was because that's your definition of emunah. So I don't know what Rambam, I wasn't there. But there is a midrash which seems to fit with my view of what emunah is, so I'm going to quote that and pretend that's what Avraham was saying as well, which is possibly you've all heard this midrash before. But source number 16, okay.
Rabbi Yitzchak said, this is comparable to someone who is travelling from place to place. Saw a castle that was lit up. He said, how can it be that this castle is lit up without someone controlling it? The owner of the castle looked out at him and said, I am the master of this castle. Similarly, Abraham Avinu would ask, is it possible for this world to be without someone controlling it? God looked out at him and said, I am the master of this castle.
This, I think, is the answer to anybody. That if you're looking for God, you'll never know. You can never prove God yes, or you can never prove God exists or prove that God doesn't exist. You'll never reach a conclusion. But if you're on a path that's looking and searching, either through emunah pshuta or emunah kfufa or whatever you're going to do, however you're going to look, if you prepare yourself, the way that you'll find God is when God speaks to you. When God opens the window away and says, hi, here I am, then you have no more questions anymore. I think if each of us looks in our lives, or is open to the possibility, possibly as you get older you notice it more, you find times in your life that God has spoken to you, and if you feel that God has spoken or sent you a message, or then you have no more questions. Or any of your questions you have are only there because whatever they are, but you've got a fundamental belief that this is true. I look back at my life and say this doesn't make any sense, unless I say there was someone who wasn't me involved in running the show. Or I was saved from this, or I was through that. Well, whatever the thing happens to be, if I've experienced God, then everything else becomes secondary. And even Avraham Avinu only got as far as he could get until God revealed himself to him. But when God says to him, this is what you must do, then there's no more questions. And so if somebody would say to me, why should I believe in God? I don't think I can convince somebody, not with this approach or that approach. But all I can say is if you allow God to speak to you, or if you notice when God does speak to you, then the question is meaningless.
Then that's also like Abraham must have stopped having the mitzvah of faith then, because like if you're saying like up to a point where Hashem was revealed to him, then you could say he had the faith, but then as soon as Hashem like revealed himself, then there's no more.
That's the Douglas Adams Babelfish approach.
Right.
For Rambam, faith means knowing God exists. And you know it even more when you see God in your life and God speaks to you. It's not a lack, it's the opposite, that's the ultimate faith. Faith is not not knowing something, faith is absolutely knowing it certainly. But with such certain knowledge that even if someone starts arguing against you, you still know that you're right and they're wrong. Actually, I'm like that all the time, but that's not this much.
Then
you can never get
knowledge then, because if Abraham knew it to that extent, and what difference does it make that Hashem reveals himself to him?
Because you can never get to that level of certainty without seeing God.
Where does that leave us with chinuch? Like, if you're in a time of, you know what I'm saying? Like, assimilation and whatever, and somebody says, I don't believe it. And you say, well, you just have to allow God, you know, when you see God in your life, you're like, well, I'm not seeing that. I've had a terrible ass. Whatever the story is.
You're right. Somebody who hasn't seen God, I think you're wasting your time. I mean, you can be nice to them, but I don't think you'll ever persuade them.
So
what do you think?
I think that's a legitimate life choice they can make. Richard Dawkins believes that raising a child to be religious is a form of child abuse. And you should not, it should be banned. And you should not, because you're feeding them lies and superstitions and denying them the possibility of doing a real investigation, discovering things for themselves. I firmly, strongly disagree with him on that. And I think that the opposite, the education system actually is quite good. Whatever system it's in, the Jewish education system that I'm familiar, certainly in Israel and even outside of Israel, is very good at involving God in every stage of a kid's life. But, I mean, from the time you teach a kid to wake up in the morning and say, Modei Ani, you're really telling them that God is there and helping them get up in the morning and everything, and then all of the brachot that we say and all of the things that, I mean, my four-year-old, whenever I ask her something, she says, well, God did it that way, or God made it like that, or God wanted it like that. I mean, I think that it's very easy to bring God into the life of a child. The harder thing is the transition when they start thinking for themselves to see whether they're going to remember that experience they had when they were a child.
But even the example that you're citing there, you're taking kids that are already in the system. And when they grow up, then they have questions, which is really part of, it's like a rite of passage. It really is a rite of passage. And if they're asking questions, it's a good thing, I think. But I think, I don't know, maybe this is not where you were going with this, but it was in my head as well.
Right.
I mean, I work with a lot of birthright groups.
Right.
Yeah.
And I deal with this all the time.
Right.
The question of kiruv and who, do you try to makariv, and then, you know, if they're not Jewish on the right side, do you even try to makariv them? I mean, there are all these questions, but is that what you're, we're talking about assimilated population.
This is my anti-kiruv speech.
Right.
I don't believe in kiruv. I don't believe you can persuade somebody of belief in God. I don't believe you can force them. Be a rubbish kid, rabbi. I think ultimately most of Kira is life when it comes down. I mean, most of Kira is being nice and making cholent and inviting them to your family and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff, which is nice, which is cool.
Didn't you have written Rabbi Kellerman? What about his book, Permission to Believe, Permission to Receive? It's like,
that's not a fair question to ask me.
you're saying him against the wall. I just say
he's a lovely person. I really like Rabbi Kellerman. I love him very much.
I think, but it also depends on how you define kiruv, because
right.
I mean, it's not, if you invite someone for a Shabbos meal, that can be considered kiruv, but not in the same light as forcing a certain doctrine down someone's throat. Right. I mean, kiruv is like is a massive category. Depends on we.
Right. I could even be tolerant, if I try really hard, of presenting some of these proofs of God's existence if they're just a tool to get a person to start thinking. Something they thought was God's old-fashioned, God is dead ever since Nietzsche and there's no point, and you show them something and they go, well, maybe I should reconsider. I can hear that that's a educational tool to start somebody thinking for themselves. I can get that. But if somebody is religious because you've used the Bible code to prove to them that it's true, or you've used the transmission from Sinai and your grandfather wouldn't lie to you argument, or any of the arguments, then I think you've lied to them, and I don't think you've given them faith, you've given them life. And I don't think that's what Judaism, I don't think that's what anybody here wants people to have.
So you're saying faith is completely experiential?
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yes.
That was very interesting.
I don't think you can persuade somebody to have faith. I'm going to stop there. On that bombshell.
No, I'm